there's a choice to be made about the value you want to place, you know, in an image. Because I think what will end up very quickly is that a sense that a general image is something that you probably won't be able to trust. If it's been through a process to verify the source of the imagery, you know, whether that means it's tied in some way to an identity, or whether it's been through a process that can offer some level of assurance that you're not dealing with a deepfake, then actually the value of that image or of that video is actually going to be much higher.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve sits down with Dr. Andrew Newell, Chief Scientific Officer at the British biometrics firm iProve, for a conversation about deepfakes. As technology improves, it's becoming ever more difficult to determine what's real and what's fake. Steve and Andrew discuss what this will mean going forward for security, social media platforms, and everyday technology users.
So, Andrew, thanks very much for joining me on the podcast today. Great to have you. One of the things that I think we've seen quite a lot of in the press, media in general, over the past days, weeks, months, is this continuing focus around deepfakes, around the way in which now artificial intelligence is potentially being used as well to enhance the quality of deepfakes. A lot of concern around that, certainly, you know, around the elections that we had in the UK and around the US elections that, of course, are upcoming. For those of us who perhaps aren't as familiar with the concept and some of the implications as you are, give us a little bit of an introduction as to where we are with deepfakes. I mean, what are they? How have they evolved? That kind of thing.
Thank you. Just firstly say, it's really, really good to be here. So in terms of actually deepfakes, now, I think you're absolutely right. You know, there's been a massive increase in the general awareness around deepfakes. But actually, deepfakes aren't new. They have been around, you know, for quite some time. They're things that we have actually, you know, seen being in use for many, many years now. And we've been warning against the threat from deepfakes going back as far as 2018. But essentially, what has changed, you know, over the years is that whereas in the early days, deepfakes were things that didn't look terribly good, that we've now reached a stage where by eye, at least, actually, the quality of deepfakes is, you know, very, very good indeed. So essentially, just in terms of, you know, what a deepfake is, it's an image or a video which is synthetic or has been modified in some way to create a likeness of someone doing or saying or something that they didn't do. So this might either be that it's an attempt to create imagery of a person that exists, then they might be saying or actually doing something, or it might be an attempt to create imagery of a person that doesn't exist at all. We do now see that there are, you know, other types of media used in deepfakes. So it's not just combined, you know, to image and video. There are such things as audio deepfakes, where that you have people who will make an audio sample that might be an existing person saying something that they didn't say, or it might be someone that doesn't exist saying something. But either way, all of these come out of advances in technology, which has allowed us to make this synthetic content, which by eye or by ear now looks very, very good indeed.
And how is it being used?
So I think that they're being used in a number of ways. We do see, obviously, that there's increasing awareness of the fact that these are being used for potential influence. There's lots of concern around the potential influence on elections. And this comes from the fact that one of the major threats from deepfakes is that by the fact that you can make an image or a video of someone appearing to do or say something that they didn't actually do or they didn't actually say, this can be used, obviously, to spread misinformation. And it's potentially very effective in this way because we are so used to the fact that when we see imagery, our brains are extremely good, you know, at being able to process the imagery. And for us, if something looks real, it feels like it is real. So we're coming to terms with having to adjust for the fact that the things that look very good by eye, you know, might actually not be real. But the other big way in which I think deepfakes are being used, and this is the way which is perhaps not, you know, as understood as the way in which they're being used for influence, is actually that they're being used potentially to attack the various identity systems that we have in place. So much of human society is underpinned by the fact that we have identity and we can verify any identity of another person, and that leads to trust. A lot of the ways in which we go through an identity verification process still rely on the ability for us to actually see that we're dealing with a real human being. You know, so as an example, there are still a number of processes out there where, in order to prove the identity of a person, you might take them through a video interview or some process like that.
Right.
And what we're seeing now is because the quality of deepfakes has become so good that actually deepfakes are being used extensively to target any system like that. And as I say, all this comes from the fact we've undergone this seismic shift, whereas the quality of deepfakes is now so good that by AI, it's almost impossible to spot them.
So if it is that good, how do you actually spot a deepfake?
Well, the key thing here is that deepfakes have evolved in such a way that they are designed to look very, very good by eye.
Right.
However, this doesn't mean that actually the images at a pixel level have become identical to real imagery. In fact, there's still a lot of very significant differences at that fine-grained detail in the image. So whilst I think we're certainly at the stage where now being able to spot these things by eye has become very, very hard, I know there are some people who say you might be able to spot flaws, for example, by looking at the eyes, but I would question whether that's still true. And I think if there are any flaws you can spot by eye, these are going to vanish very quickly with the various updates to the techniques we see. Instead, what we have to do is we have to rely on the technology that exists to be able to pick up this fine-grained detail in the image. And this is a fundamental shift. Because, as I say, it's moving away from what is still seen to be as one of the best sources of truth, i.e., you know, the human brain. But still, what we have to do is accept here that actually technology is the way that we're going to mitigate this threat.
So, you know, I'm thinking a lot of people obviously are taken in by deepfakes because they're looking at it on their smartphones. You know, you make the point that with some of them, you might be able, if you studied it, to figure it out visually. But if you're looking at it in the way that most of us actually now use technology, you know, we're not spending a huge amount of time staring at the screen, trying to work out whether I'm actually talking to you, Andrew, or whether it's, you know, an AI-generated thing that is talking to me now. And so for the ordinary consumer, I suppose, because that's, I think, one of the angles that we need to look at, what are the sorts of things that they might be able to look out for, if anything, today to spot a deepfake? Because it's being used in all sorts of areas, isn't it? You know, persuade, you know, mum and dad that the child that's gone off on holiday has suddenly run out of money. It's being used in ways to try to influence people to vote, for instance. I'm thinking more of audio here rather than video. But is there anything that we can do as consumers that would allow us to spot a deepfake?
I think that the issue here is that whilst with some techniques, there might be certain flaws. So I've heard people say, if you look at the eye movement or if you look at certain other things, you might be able to tell flaws. But the danger is that there are new techniques which are coming out all of the time. Existing techniques are getting much better and the quality is ever improving. So with lots of these now, there aren't any flaws. Essentially, that you look at these things and you won't be able to tell. I think one of the big risks is if we, the sense that there will be flaws which you can spot, if you don't spot any flaws, then this can lead to false confidence that the imagery that you're dealing with is actually real. So I think, as I say, if you're dealing with, you know, slightly old-fashioned techniques or if you're dealing with poor quality examples, there might be flaws, but they do vary from technique to technique. But I think it's very dangerous for us to rely on trying to spot those flaws. Instead, as I say, I think the urgency here, and this is the absolute key part, is that we need to get the technology in place to make sure that the processes that rely on the genuineness of the person in the imagery, that we can have something in place that we know works, that we know that we can trust, and is something that is very easy to use. So, for example, that you mentioned, you know, on this call now, and you can see me, that we don't spend time trying to work out, you know, is this the real me? Essentially, what would be fantastic is if we could have, you know, a process that we could go through, you know, such that without us having to look at the imagery, that I can know that I'm talking to you and you can know that you're talking to me. And having a technology, you know, system in place that is able to do that in a way that is very simple for us, you know, in a way that is very quick, that both gives us trust. So that, I think, is the answer to this. But we do have to do that very, very quickly.
And I was going to say, where are we then with that technology? Is it something that's available today in part, or how long have we got to wait till we can get something that allows for what you've just described?
I think to answer that, we have to break the problem down into two. So in terms of the threat from deepfakes, there's the threat from deepfakes to the identity processes and systems that we have in place. You know, so this is essentially how can we maintain, you know, a secure way to establish people's identity for people to verify their identity in the threat from deepfakes. And the second problem is how can we tell, you know, whether an arbitrary image is something that is real or whether it is something that is synthetic or has been modified in some way. I break that down into two, because essentially the big advantage you have in the first of those problems is you have some control over the image acquisition process. So in other words, that we can do things to make sure that the imagery that we get gives us the best chance of being able to tell that it is a real image. In the second of those, we don't have any control. So if I answered the first one of those, how do we make sure that we can secure identity proof and processes against the threat from deepfakes? The technology to do that exists today. Essentially, the answer here is that you have to have a strong form of what's known as liveness. So essentially, the liveness process is something which is how you ascertain that you're dealing with a real human being that is in front of the camera right now. I think here, you know, just to break down it into a bit of detail, in order for it to be a strong liveness system, we think there are two key traits here. So the first is that it should be a challenge, a response-based system. And this means a system issues a challenge that creates a predictable response in the imagery. So this both serves to make the imagery much harder to fake, which is what we want to do. But also, and very importantly, it requires that the new imagery has to be created for each time that someone goes through the identity verification process. So it makes the job of an attacker much, much harder. And the second requirement, I think, to make this very strong is that any identity proofing system, it needs to be able to detect and track the evolution of the deepfake threat. And this is something that is absolutely key. We know the deepfakes are going to continue to evolve. And in order to maintain security, it's vital that we can observe exactly how that evolution is taking place. You know, so an iProof, that we do this through something we call the ISOC, which is the iProof Security Operations Center. And this is a way in which we can spot the evolution of the deepfake threat. So I think on the protection of identity proofing systems against the threat from deepfakes, we have a technology solution now, and the urgency is to make sure that this technology is used wherever that we need to actually guard against that threat. In terms of the general deepfake problem, in terms of how can we tell that, you know, an arbitrary image isn't a deepfake, I think this is a much harder problem, and we still have some work to go here. So what we'll probably see is there's a mixture of answers to this. It will probably include various measures to verify the source of the imagery, such as I would expect the watermarking has a part to play here. It might involve signing the imagery once a potentially verified source is established. And I think this approach might work well where you're dealing with, you know, imagery that's aggregated for things like news outlets. It will be harder, you know, to do when the imagery comes from a previously unknown source. So I think here we might see an interesting link where there's a need in some way to actually tie the imagery with some form of identity. And that can be done without having to divulge the identity itself. But I do think there will be an ongoing need, you know, for algorithmic systems to be able to spot deepfakes, even in that second problem as well.
So if we look at, say, for instance, social media, so the social media companies, is what you're saying that there's going to be an onus or indeed a need for social media companies to be running some of this algorithmic based software behind the scenes, or are they not going to be, do you think, able to take a responsible stance when it comes to this kind of thing? Because there's a lot of talk at the moment, isn't there, about the role that, you know, the giant social media companies should be taking, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing, and, you know, various debates going on about what's reasonable and possible. So where do you think we stand when it comes to the use of social media on this?
Well, so I think it's going to be very much that this is something, and there's a choice to be made about the value you want to place, you know, in an image. Because I think what will end up very quickly is that a sense that a general image is something that you probably won't be able to trust. If it's been through a process to verify the source of the imagery, you know, whether that means it's tied, you know, in some way to an identity, or whether it's been through a process that can offer some level of assurance that you're not dealing with in a deepfake, then actually the value of that image or of that video is actually going to be much higher. So I think that what we'll find is that depending on where the imagery is actually being used, we find that there are different processes which are put in place. And it might be, for example, that people have the option to actually put their own imagery through some process, which means that you can assign a higher level of trust to it. And in that case, that imagery has such much more value, or that you could just treat an image as it comes. And that will mean that the value of that individual image is then going to be much lower, because without any assurance, which is tied to it, of the genuineness, the fact is that when people see that image, you know, that they aren't really going to have any confidence whether it's real or not. Now, in some cases, that might not matter. You know, if that you're looking at something that is just funny, is not implying that anyone is, you know, is actually doing anything, you know, which they might not have done, then perhaps the damage of that, you know, is relatively small. However, I think the interesting thing is where we're going to find that there's an onus which is placed upon people to ensure that information is not able to be used for misinformation, then I think that's the greater challenge there. And that's going to be something which we're going to have to understand exactly where the responsibility for that will lie. But I do think we're at a very interesting point in time now, because the threat from deepfakes have evolved very, very quickly, and everyone is catching up to this in time, when that we come to find that there is a general sense that unless an image has come, you know, with some additional information or has been through some identity proofing process, that you'll find that the trust in imagery then will become sort of very, very low, at which point that the problem changes.
Hmm. Are there any examples, Andrew, where deepfake can be a good thing, where it can be used for good?
And there are cases like that, you know, that we do find out, obviously, that much of the focus, you know, and rightly so, I think, is around the threat from deepfakes. But we can't imagine, you know, circumstances where actually that the technology which is used to produce deepfakes can actually be used for good. You know, so for example, for people who make films, if that you want to put out a film and that you want to support scripts with multiple languages, using the technology, you know, for deepfakes might actually offer you a really, really good way to be able to produce multiple versions, you know, of the film with different languages, where actually it looks a lot more natural, you know, than the techniques that might have been used in the past. You know, equally, that you can imagine, you know, for example, where a company wants to put out, you know, a promotional video or perhaps guides for their staff or things like this, whereas in the past, you might have had to actually film that video, you'd have to go through all of the effort involved in that, that you might be able to generate these things actually in a much more efficient way now. You might be able to have an avatar, you know, which could be based upon a person in that company who can then actually issued with a script. And these videos become actually sort of much more efficient to make. I think, though, that the crucial thing there is you still need a way to be able to tell whether the content is real or not, because that ensures that where that you are making imagery or videos, you know, for a use case where it's known that this is fake, it still means that then that they can't be used for harm.
You've made a very valid point that it's probably got to the point where technology is the answer, if you like, in terms of trying to distinguish between what is real and what is deep fake. Is there also, do you think, a role for education of the user? Is there anything that we're not doing that we could be doing so that we're better equipped, I guess, to work, you know, hand in glove with technology on this kind of thing?
So I think that we have to accept that until this technology, you know, is in place, and I say that the technology does exist, you know, but until we have adoption everywhere where and it's needed, educating the user, that is probably the only thing that we can do. However, as I say, that the big challenges we have here is that it is becoming, you know, very, very difficult to spot these things by eye. And I think the crucial thing here is that we must not place the onus of mitigating against the threat from deepfakes on the user. And that's partially because I think the effectiveness of such an approach is currently low, and it's going to get lower. But also the real danger here is that you'll find that actually different groups in society might be sort of disproportionately able to actually do that. So if, for example, there were flaws in a certain type of deepfake, and these were things that certain people could spot, you might find there are certain groups in society, you know, such as the elderly or people who don't use technology that often, who are actually going to find that that task is much harder. So they might end up being a lot more vulnerable to the threat from deepfakes. And one of the most important things, if not the most important thing, is when we think about a way to mitigate these threats, is that it has to be something that works for everybody. You know, we cannot end up with a system that only works for certain groups in a society. And again, this leads us back, you know, to the fact that technology is the answer to this. You know, if we can introduce a new technology which, you know, in the identity proofing realm exists, that means we can make sure that it works for everyone.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sitting here listening, and it occurs to me that the essence of what we're talking about, people sort of changing information or changing imagery and that kind of thing, is actually, and I think you made this point at the beginning, it's actually been around for a very, very long time. I mean, if you go right the way back in history, you know, that's, people have always wanted to do that for their own ends. The situation we find ourselves now, of course, in is that technology has advanced to such a point where it is, to the point you make, probably only technology that's going to be able to distinguish between what is a deep fake and what isn't. So a good example, I think, of really where we've come and that journey we've been on, and, you know, the need for us to continue, I think, to educate users. I did just want to ask you again, though, one final question about social media. And, you know, we see a lot of imagery being put onto social media. We see a lot of harm potentially being caused in the sort of malicious use of fake imagery, either for blackmail or for other purposes. And I did just want to really get your view as to whether or not you think at some point in the not too distant future, we are going to see social media providers taking a more responsible approach to this kind of thing, or is it going to require some fairly heavy duty legislation to force them down that road?
I think that's a very interesting question. And I think, yeah, only time will tell, you know, kind of which way that we have to go there. But as I say, I think the shift that we're going to observe is that over time, and this might occur, you know, at a fairly quick rate, that we will find that as the threat, you know, around deepfakes grows, as people understand the fact that you cannot spot these things by eye, that we will come to the common understanding that any image which hasn't been assured in some way, where there is no, you know, information which helps you understand that this is, you know, a real image, will have to disregard. You know, it will just be seen as something that is assumed to be fake in the absence of any evidence that it's real. And as I say, I think at that point, you know, it will become very interesting, because what we'll observe is there'll be, you know, a very strong incentive for anyone who wants to produce or to share the imagery to make sure that there is information that goes with it, which can verify it. So as I say, what we see is a devaluing of imagery as a whole, unless it comes so that it's been through some assurance process. And I think at that point, the incentives around this are going to radically shift, because it doesn't just become then about, you know, what any organization should do to stop harm. It becomes where you have any organization that is going to gain value, you know, from the sharing of imagery, the need to verify that imagery in some way is going to become essential for them.
Andrew, it's been great talking to you. Thank you so much for those insights. And I'm sure that our listeners now are far better equipped to certainly understand where we're at with deepfakes, and indeed, you know, have heard some of the ways in which perhaps technology is going to help us deal with them in the future. So thank you very much indeed for explaining that.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks to this week's guest, Dr. Andrew Newell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and we'd be pleased if you'd consider sharing the episode. To become a member, get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss our other podcast, Dear InfoSec, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.